Hey everyone, and welcome back to Palestine Exists, the podcast where we explore the layered realities of Palestinian life, resistance, and identity under settler colonialism. Today's episode is going to be a dense one, both emotionally, intellectually, and politically, because we're unpacking how gender and nationalism becomes core targets in the machinery of genocide. As always, we have Hiba here today. And Lina is sick, so she's not able to join us, but she's always, you know, listening, and she'll be listening to this later. So hi, Lina. Hi, Hiba.
Hi,
how are
Nourish.
you?
Hi, my love. How are you?
Hi, baby. Alhamdulillah, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm kind of, we were just talking about it actually before the episode began. I'm a little defeated with the news of what happened and the broken ceasefire. So we're just going to continue to talk about Palestine and talk about, you know, and it's kind of like our clear, it's kind of our point from day one. Remember, like, a ceasefire isn't the end game and it's not liberation. So I think this kind of like, I think this kind of gave it a push that the Palestinian movement needed.
Yeah.
Not diaspora, because like we were continuing to fight for Palestinian people, but I think in like non-Palestinian, pro-Palestinians, because they were defeated, they had like fatigue, and I think this reignited something in them. Hopefully, hopefully we'll see more protests and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm a little defeated today. But Hila Nouch, sorry you're sick again, but I love you. Before we begin, I'm going to offer a trigger warning. We're going to be talking about sexual violence, gendered humiliation, child-targeted psychological warfare, and systematic destruction of family structures. It talks about like incarceration, state-sponsored humiliation. So basically we're going to be talking about the, like, violence that's deeply personal and systemic, and it like a violence that targets not just lives but like bodies, gender identities, and roles that hold communities together. So if you're not in the headspace for this right now, we're absolutely encourage you to step back, take care of yourself, and you can always come back when you're ready. You know, we can't free Palestine if we haven't freed our minds yet. So take care 100%. Of yourselves, y'all.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very tough topic, but it has to be talked about, right? So the UN Human Rights Council specifically released a new report about a week or so ago, talking about everything that happened in Gaza, but specifically the ways in which Israel's genocidal campaign operates through physical destruction, but not just through that, through the systematic deconstruction of Palestinian gender roles and violent distribution of national identity formation. It's going to be a tough topic, but, you know, we have to do it. Just reading the UN report or listening to Hiba read it for me, W Hiba for that, it does. It, like, every single new report, every single new headline pushes you into that, you know, fight mode. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to say, like we're going to be talking about genocide and, like, through, what am I saying? Oh my God, I like lost it. Okay. But we're going to be like asking like pivotal questions, like what happens when a colonial regime doesn't want to erase a people, but like they want to unmake how they understand themselves as men, as women, as parents, or like as a nation. And I think it's like important, like in our conversation and our analysis, to like to think about how Israel weaponizes gender as part of its genocidal campaign, how it pushes to emasculate Palestinian men through like carceral violence, public humiliation, and forced helplessness, and how it like masculinizes Palestinian women by pushing them into like roles of survival, leadership, and like resistance under unbearable conditions. And it like with when it comes to like, yeah, when it comes to about like international law and like critical scholarship, genocide is not only about the killing of individuals, it's about the destruction of a people as a collective. And the key way to destroy a people is to target the symbolic and embodied expressions of a national identity. When you do that through gender specifically, and I'm gonna get into like nationalism and gender in a second, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just with everything going on. So on Tuesday, March 18th, Israel, without a warning, decided to restart the genocide at exactly 2 a.m. Gaza time. If you're Muslim or if you have been following, you know, Palestine, I hope all of our listeners have. We are currently in the month of Ramadan. So March 18th was the 18th. Day of Ramadan, without a warning, they restarted and reignited the genocide inside of Gaza, 2 a.m. in the morning. And it's very important to notate it was 2 a.m. during Ramadan, during the holiest month for Muslims. So we have family members gathering around, you know, inside of their family homes, moms, wives, daughters, sisters, men, everyone gathered around eating, right, to start fasting from sunrise to sunset. So what Israel decided to do randomly with no warning given is to bombard civilian areas on March 18th. And this isn't the first time we've seen it, right? It's been happening for the past 15 months. It's been happening for the past 76 years. But what's very important about this is the where's daddy, quote unquote, AI thing that they created. The name itself, right, Hibat, Where's Daddy? The name
and it's so fucked.
It's so fucked. It's so sexual. It's so disgusting. I feel like disgusted by saying, oh, there's this Where's Daddy thing. But what Where's Daddy is it's Israel's AI-driven surveillance tool. Its purpose is to track specifically Palestinian men in Gaza to determine when they are at home. And why? Why do they wait for Palestinian men to be at home? Oh, it's so they can target and airstrike them while they're at home with their wives, daughters, sons, whatever else.
Yeah, and it's not just that. So what's so fucked about it, right, is the fact that it doesn't just ask where the father is, but it presupposes his absence, his failure or his death. Right, so it already assumes that he's going to be gone from the family home, right? It's not like, oh, it's not like daddy's home, right? It's like, where's daddy? Assuming, literally presupposing that the father is not at home. And it's like mockery, and it's both mockery and ontological invalidation. It feminizes and it infantilizes by implication, declaring that the Palestinian man has failed in the most basic masculine national duty to protect.
Oh my God, yes, you freaking ate, bro, you ate, because that's exactly it. And we've been talking about it, us specifically. This is the reason why Humanize Gaza, right, started, is because we dehumanized and demasculated our men to such an extent that, oh, you know, only the women and children matter. 90% are women and children, da-da-da-da. And we forget that the men are the ones out there either resisting, fighting the occupation, looking for food for their wives, for their daughters, for their sons, looking through the rubble for their wives, daughters, sons, mothers, whatever else. And so that often gets overlooked. And so with this specific AI system that Israel has created, it literally follows the men because it's, you know, it's easier to follow men while they're at home in the comfort, quote unquote, of their home with their family members. Their guards are let down a bit. So instead
of... Remind me later, Pasha, to talk about the whole quote unquote comfort in your own home thing when we talk about the report.
Yeah, obviously, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So they, instead of killing them while they're on the quote-unquote battlefield or where it's easier, right, where they're outside, no, they wait for them, the men. And these aren't just men, right? There are military-aged men. So if you're 12 to 40, 50 years old, these are the men that they are targeting. They just label them all as combatants, even if they are civilians. So civilians have been wrong targeted, and this has it's been discussed in the report. We'll dig into it a bit, but this shows how Israel systematically targets, and their primary targets based on specifically this AI is family homes. So if you know, if your dad is coming home for dinner, is going to mean the death of your whole family. How do you ever feel safe in Gaza?
You don't. like we when we talk about like there's no safe place in Gaza, like not like, and it's so fucked, and like, you know, like I'm sorry for my like language, but like this is the only way that I can like kind of describe the reality of like this situation. But it's necessary. It's like even like the you know, someone, you know, as a fatherless daughter, right? Like I would dream when I was like a little girl to like be able to like that you would assume like your father's like touch, right? Is like, and you know, our dad, your dad, he gave this to you, right? So like you would go to your
Literally.
father and he every like ounce of like of the scary parts would go away, right? And so I think that like even when we talk about, oh, there's no safe place in Gaza, it's quite literally because even within, even under your father's protection, even under your father's touch, you are still going to like, you are still going to be what's it called? Support,
Targeted.
like, thank you, targeted to, yeah, it's so, oh my God, it's
And it
fucked.
yeah, and it plays on the sexual gender-based roles that Israel is specifically targeting. So you said it perfectly, especially within our culture, right? Like the man, your father, is the protector. It's the person who's gonna go get the money, bring you the food, and then when they're home, this is where you feel protected. They're stripping that away from Palestinian women, Palestinian men, Palestinian children, whatever you want to label them as. They're stripping that protection from the children and from the man. And what is a man in our culture if they can't protect?
Right. I think like this is such a good like segue to talk about like nationalism and like what like how nationalism is ultimately gendered, right? And we see this, for example, like, and I'm going to be referencing, you know, one of my favorite like papers. It's Between Complicity and Subversion.
Ugh, I love that
You know
paper.
which one I'm talking about,
I
right?
know exactly which one you're talking about.
And I'm going to also be referencing like Ghassan Kanafani and how he wrote like certain things, but specifically when it comes to the Palestinian context, when like okay, so like when we look at nationalism, right, nationalism as a whole, that there's a connection between like nationalisms are gendered, and they specifically like with even like specific like the performance of specific gender roles is important for like imagining of nations, right? So I'm talking about like theoretical stuff right now. Like in like academia, we look and see that men typically represent the active agents of nationalism. They symbolize forward progress, modernity, and like revolutionary change, and women represent continuity and like the embodiment and reproduction of the nation itself, right? And as Palestinian, like within the Palestinian, like conservative and like kind of like, you know, within the Palestinian case, yeah, like we see when our nationalism, you know, I always say that like our nationalism started as defeatism, right? Because like nation states are a semi new concept. Like they're not something that we, you know what I mean? Palestine existed as a region, as our homeland, but when it came to nationalism or nation states, this is semi new, right? Nation states was a European concept, so it started, I believe, as a sense of defeatism, right? As a sense of loss because we had to lose everything in order to understand what it was. And so
100%.
you see this, in like 67, like there was an image we all know, and it's the Fedayi, right? And he emerged in like after like the 1967 Nakba and like the rise of the guerrilla movements, the PFLP, DFLP, Fatah, and others. And he wasn't just a soldier; he was like a sacred masculine like archetype. He was viewed as like a man who surrenders personal desire, marriage, family, material success for the collective redemption of the nation. And his masculinity was forged not in reproduction, but in sacrifice. And like Ghassan Kanafani says, like, the cause is not a hotel you can check in and out of. And it encapsulates the irreversible commitment that defines the Fedayi. He's not a temporary nationalist, but one who becomes nationalized. And he's basically fused with the cause. And yeah, and so that. It's there's like within academia, right? There's like critiques of like nationalism viewing it through this gendered concept, right? Because like for example, Ahmed writes about how Palestinian national narratives, like sometimes they reduce individuals like men and women to symbols, and it strip like strips them from complexity. We see this, for example, with Leila Khaled, right? And I would recommend everybody to read her memoir, and I'll also pray for her because she's in the hospital right now. So, inshallah, but
Inshallah.
and it, she was viewed as this like sex icon thing, but that she was very conservative, like, and it, she wasn't like she did not appeal to the eyes of men. Like it was like how this duality existed within her, but like because of nationalism and the way that it works, is that they only always had like wrote her off as like one way. This is like her kind of critique with it. It like that essentially like it fetishized like masculinity, or like it fetishized like a woman as a mother, right? Which is like, you know, we can have our own conversations about that. But however, like we see this arise like with this is like Young Men of the Stones, and as well as like this like paper I read about like masculinity during the First Intifada. And we saw that most of the people like who were throwing rocks during the First Intifada were young men, were like boys. And we see that how it the Fedai masculinity wasn't symbolic, it was like ritualized in everyday life. And like these young men were like were socialized into like a nationalist masculinity by like participation of the demonstrations, and like in order to be granted the right of like to be grant like sorry, in order to be like given this respect and status of a man, you had to endure Israeli violence as almost like a rite of passage.
100%.
Right?
We see it, right? Like we're on TikTok and we hear it when two men or two sensitive men are fighting. They're always like, "Well, I was in Palestine and I had a gun pointed towards my
Yeah, and
face.
I
Have
was
you
in
ever?"
prison, like, yeah.
And it's sad that this is how the only way for you to be a quote unquote man within our culture is to be humiliated by the occupation.
And so, when we talk about like, I know I've just yapped a bit. I'm so sorry, like
No,
chat,
don't be sorry.
sorry.
You that was
But
no, that was amazing the way you worded it. It
thank
was
you.
beautiful, as
And I,
always.
my God, I freaking love you. But like, I want to talk about like Ghassan Kanafani. Because Ghassan Kanafani, like the way that he embodies this concept of like masculinity within the context of the Palestinian or Palestinian like diaspora, Palestinians in exile. You see this with like, for example, Men in the Sun. He there's like the story, I'm not sure if you read it, Petra, but there's the one story about Abu Qais, Asad and Marwan, and like every one of them has their own stories, right? One of them had to marry his cousin because he like one of them had to marry his cousin because he had no other like option. He had like his uncle offered him like money or whatever, like you know what I mean, like who offered him like money. And so then there was like also Assad, who was like a political activist who's been able to withstand like the humiliation of like prisons in Jordan, and that was the one who had to marry his cousin. And then you see like Abu Qais himself, right? He was, I think, injured in a he was injured, and he like I think lost his manhood, like I think in during one of the bombs. And there was like another one who's like Marwan, the third like protagonist, who marries his father marries like a crippled woman like Shafia because like she owns a house and has a concrete roof. And so and as a father, like you know, as a father figure for Marwan, he becomes like humiliated, right? And so and you see that it's a story circled around like these like you know three men, and like the three characters like national defeat is experienced as like economic disadvantage and a loss of their traditional role as providers for themselves and their families, including their women. And then there's the main representative of like the Palestinian Arab degradation is as Abul Khazairan, who is like the truck driver who promises to take these three young men to Kuwait. He's like a smuggler or whatever, and his name in Arabic literally means like what is it, masochismo? And he was a fighter in 48, but then he was stepped in on a landmine, and then he lost the loss of his sexual organs. And he says it like, I'm gonna read a passage from the book. I know you guys, I know I'm talking a lot about it, but like you'll understand why it's so important in like understanding the Palestinian sense of identity and self and gender, and why what the report we're gonna like talk about in a bit, why it's so, why is Israel like knows what they're doing when they want to, you know, when you destroy a people in whole or in part, you don't have to kill every single member, you just have to kill the people as how they're existing, which is as well as removing who they are and how they operate within their society. So he goes, 10 years had passed since they took his manhood from him, and he had lived that humiliation day after day, hour after hour. He had swallowed it with his pride and examined it every moment of those 10 years, and he still hadn't gotten used to it. He hadn't accepted it. For 10 long years, he had been trying to accept the situation. But what situation? To confess quite simply that he lost his manhood while fighting for his country? And what good had it done? He had lost his manhood and his country, and damn everything in this bloody world. And so Kanafani is, in this little passage, what he says is, he says, he Kanafani experienced national defeat as castration. Right? Like, so yeah, so like this is really, you know, it's really important. Like that's why I'm talking about it. So,
There was this other I it's her and her husband. I think they're like psychiatrist or
oh,
therapist.
baby, those are my people. What do you say, Lara and Steven Sheha?
I remember when
Okay.
you made me watch one of their videos, they were interviewing Palestinian men in the West Bank. I will never forget the story because when I heard it, it made me, I broke. I was broken. But it was basically this man who went to the therapist, right? And he was saying he gets flustered and a lump
He has
comes
like a lump in his throat.
in
Yeah, he
his
can't.
throat. Yeah, and he stops being able to speak, and they like started digging into it, and it all led back. I'm gonna tear up right now. But it all
Well,
led
and he
back
but he specifically said a ball in his throat,
a ball in
specifically.
his throat.
Right.
Yes, and it all led back to the moment when he was at a checkpoint taking his daughter to, I don't know, somewhere like she really wanted to go
Her friend's house,
her
and
friend's
she was
house.
singing a song.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
And then the military, the IDF, ITF person was like, "No, you can't go. I'm checking you." And they kept them there for like hours, and the little girl had to use the restroom. And she was telling him with her eyes crying, with tears in her
But
eyes,
his
saying,
daughter, wait, so real quick, his daughter throughout the trip, like while on her way there, was singing bouncy, bouncy, bouncy ball, bouncy, bouncy over the wall. This is why the image of a ball is extremely important here, but go ahead.
Yeah, and then be he's the protector. He's her father. She should be able to use the restroom whenever, but she couldn't. And he was like, "I can't. We can't take you." He asked the IDF person, and they're like, "No, let her pee in the car. Let
They
her pee
aimed
in
a
the
weapon.
car."
Yeah, they aimed a weapon
They,
at him.
yes. And the little girl, he describes it. She looked at me like she was defeated, and then she peed in the car, and she never got to go to her friend's house. And on the way back, she was not singing the bouncy, bouncy ball. And this
Yeah.
is why
I
he
can read it if
feels,
you want.
oh, whenever I think of that,
I
Hibba,
know.
it breaks me
I know.
because you can see yourself. I'm a mom, right? If I'm telling my daughter, like, yeah, tomorrow we're gonna go, da da da, I'll take her. We won't have a checkpoint. We won't do any of that. I won't be humiliated. My daughter won't be. So imagining just her, like a Palestinian man trying to take his Palestinian daughter to her friend's house, could end with him being,
Here, I'll read it.
masculinity be, oh my, please do, please
Okay.
do.
It says, he goes, Amjad told Yoad that he waved down a soldier, telling him, "My daughter needs a bathroom." Instead of responding to him, the soldiers ran towards him with their weapons raised. And Yoad is the Palestinian psychoanalyst who is working with him. He said, "I raised my hands towards the sky and shouted at them, 'She wants a bathroom, please let me pass.' The officer charged, shouted. He said, "Get back in your car. Get back. Get in the car. Tell your daughter to piss herself in the car." All the while, his daughter continued to cry, "Blah, blah, 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 I need a bathroom." Amjad recalled getting back in his car, hugging his daughter, and with a trembling voice telling her, "Do it here, Baba. Do it quietly here in the car." He remembered how in that moment his daughter's screaming stopped as the smell of urine spread in the car. Amjad looked at his daughter and found her shedding silent tears. He hugged her as he drove them home. As he looked at the checkpoint gate, he remembered the cheerful song of his daughter at the beginning of the day, "Bouncy, bouncy over the wall. We are not you, Dabe." After which he immediately felt a ball stuck in his throat. Because they were never going to get past this physical and metaphorical wall, right?
Mm.
And yeah, so it's extremely important when we talk about it's extremely important. I'm glad that we're talking about this. This is so important. But and especially when it comes to like when we look at, like, for example, like how Palestinian men are usually like, when we look at how Palestinian men, or how like national identity is usually mapped onto the body, right? Like our body, our physical body, our body becomes the surface upon which sovereignty is imagined, lost, or reclaimed. So like we see the Palestinian male body depicted as either wounded, right, tortured, or dying. So like the prisoner, the martyr, the amputee, or we see like we see them hypervisible in resistance, or invisibilized in grief or defeat. And we see them represented as the defender of the national honor, but only through militarized or sacrificial roles.
Mm-hmm.
And like a Palestinian man can be a fighter, a father, or a corpse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Israel does everything they can to take that away from them, right? Or even when they exist outside of that, when they are, you know, when they're not a corpse, when they're not a fighter, when they're not a father of martyrs, when they're just your teacher, or when they're like our friends we've met, right, Petra over the app,
yeah.
That when they're like that, they're either depoliticized, feminized, or deviant, and we've seen that specifically with like one of our friends, So essentially, I think that when you look at like the when you look at like basically like Palestinian masculinity and the nationalist imaginary, it's stuck in a double mind, right? Double bind. Mm-hmm. I mean, it says to be properly masculine means to be like revolutionary, but we believe that like but in order to be revolutionary, you have to, it would mean death or disappearance, right? But the Palestinian cause, like we've been able to make this narrative of like Palestinian existence is resistance, right? And that Palestinian men are our protectors, regardless whether or not they're our fighters, because they're, you know, every single man is a fighter, every single woman is a fighter, every single child is a fighter. But you see that, like, you see the fathers of martyrs, right? The fathers of their martyr children crying loudly in public. Yeah. It disrupts this stoic masculinity. You see, like, you see this, like, new kind of I don't know, this new like definition of like what it means to be masculine, but at the end of the day always leads back to specifically you know, the protectors, protectors, right? And this is why, like, we're gonna briefly like now talk about the human rights what is the Human Rights Commission and what they found in their like in commission or their inquiry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like what I talked about when it comes to about genocide. Sorry, one second.
Oh, that was, ooh, yeah. That was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, and everyone, you guys are probably wondering, like, okay, what does all of this have to do with the UN report?
Oh my god, not another hibba yap.
No, it was beautiful, but what we're trying to explain is how Palestinian men are only viewed as, you know, if they're fighting, if they're a Hamas fighter, if they're Saraya al-Quds fighter, PFLP, that this is the only way when you imagine a Palestinian man, that's usually how you imagine him. So when we talk about what we found or what the UN has found within this report, how they disproportionately targeted specifically men and boys from 12 to 40, 50 years old to try and remove, the images we have of Palestinian men, not just for us, not just for us in the diaspora, but for within them, right? And the report is specifically stated they humiliated them to this extent to show the people outside who aren't in detention cells or who aren't, you know, witnessing it, this could be you. They would publish these humiliating videos of our Palestinian men being raped, sexually assaulted, naked, dancing, all of these nasty, humiliating rituals online, not just for their like satanic, sadistic, whatever. It's a warning, and it's a warning for any other Palestinian men. You think you're a man? Oh, okay. Well, come into our
We'll come
detention.
show you,
Come,
yeah.
we'll show you how much of a man you are. And this is why it's so systematic what they have done. Even in the report, it says, you know.
Yeah, we should read some of the conclusions from the report.
Yeah, of course. At the beginning, I believe when they were talking about like the methodology, they wrote like, yeah, this is what we've seen, the sexual assault, the gender-based, and they specifically state this isn't the first time we have investigated Israel for doing this, but this has been the worst case of it.
Yeah. So, like, for example, it talks about how, here, where is it? It talks about how, I'm sorry, one second. Let me just find exactly what they talk about because there's like two, there's the two aspects of it. There's the two gendered notions. So we'll talk about the men, about the men aspect, right? But specifically, it talks about how, where is it? Okay. That, specific forms of sexual and actually no, I'll talk here. Okay, it says Israeli detention is characterized by widespread and systematic abuse and sexual gender-based violence. These practices have increased significantly in severity and frequency since 7 October 2023, following orders and statements of the Minister of National Security Ben Gvir, who is in charge of prisons. The mistreatment of Palestinian detainees by Israeli authorities is a result of an intentional policy that utilizes sexual, reproductive, and other forms of gender-based violence to humiliate and degrade Palestinians in detention. This was observed across several facilities, temporary holding locations, during interrogation, and while in transit. The frequency, prevalence, and severity of sexual and gender-based crimes perpetrated across the OPT, which is the Occupied Palestinian Territory, leads the commission to conclude that sexual and gender-based violence is increasingly used as a method of war by Israel to destabilize, dominate, oppress, and destroy the Palestinian people. The commission documented a pattern of sexual violence, including cases of rape and other forms of sexual violence, torture, and other inhumane acts that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. And it goes, one more, like a couple more, like sentences. It says, specific forms of sexual and gender-based violence, such as forced public stripping and nudity, sexual harassment, including threats of rape, as well as sexual assault, de facto form part of the ISF, which is the, sorry, let me just get the,
Israeli
ISF was
security,
the
yeah,
Israeli
security
Security
forces.
Forces, thank you. Is the, yeah, so by the ISF standard operating procedures towards Palestinians, the commission concludes that these and other forms of sexualized torture, including rape and violence targeting the genitals, are committed with either explicit orders or an implicit encouragement by the top civilian and military leadership. The commission found that all its documented incidents of sexual and gender-based violence committed by members of the ISF were met with impunity. It says that the commission's findings demonstrate a clear pattern of members of the ISF and settlers committing sexual gender-based crimes aimed at instilling fear with the underlying intention to perpetuate Palestinian subordination and remove Palestinians from their land. The commission therefore concludes that sexual and gender-based violence was intended not only to humiliate, punish, and intimidate the individual Palestinians, but the civilian population as a whole, with the objective to subordinate, destroy, and expel the Palestinian community.
It's very important as well, Hiba, to mention this isn't just the ITF, right? These aren't just active duty soldiers in this
I talk
report.
about
It's
reservists, police officers, yeah.
reservists, police officers, and the settlers. There were here, I'm going to read it. So this is from the report. It says Israeli soldiers, in some cases, together with Israeli civilians and settlers, have also committed acts with similar characteristics intended to punish, humiliate, and intimidate Palestinian men and boys. In three cases documented by the commission in the West Bank, victims were subjected to forced public stripping, sexual, physical, or mental abuse by civilians. And in two of these cases, they were accompanied by soldiers. So when, you know, Palestinians, we've heard it a bit, right? Where we say, you know, every single Israeli is complicit in what is happening, not only because they are living on stolen land, taking Palestinians' land, they're actively accompanying these ITF soldiers with harassing Palestinian boys and men, sexually assaulting them and raping them. Like in the report, it talks about how men and boys in the West Bank were raped physically by the civil by the settlers, and the ITF was just sitting there watching it.
Literally, you should read paragraph 201 so they can understand like how. Here, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, no, I got it. So 201 says the commission concludes on reasonable grounds that men and boys have been subjected to specific acts based on their gender, which were committed with the intent to punish and humiliate them in retaliation for the quote unquote crimes committed on the 7th of October. The commission concludes that the ISF specifically targeted men and boys on the ground of gender based on the following facts that the commission documented. Only men and boys were repeatedly filmed and photographed by soldiers while subjected to sexual violence or sexual torture and ill treatment, including while wholly or partly naked, blindfolded, kneeling on the ground, tied, sorry, I lost, tied
okay, and or subjected
to physical abuse. Digital footage of Palestinian men and boys, wholly or partly naked, was disseminated online by ISF soldiers operating in Gaza. Male detainees were subjected to rape and other forms of sexual and reproductive violence in detention. Statements by Israeli officials regarding those responsible for the attacks on October 7th implicitly singled out male perpetrators attempting to dehumanize and vilify Palestinian men with reference to human animals, barbarism, rapists, and ISIS. Videos of alleged male perpetrators of sexual violence committed in Israel on 7th October were made and disseminated by the members of the ISF, revealing the identities of Palestinian men despite the absence of due process, formal persecution, and conviction by a court.
Yeah. And I think it's like, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, you can. I'm sorry. It's so disgusting to me because, again, right, like I personally have this notion and this bias within me with viewing our men. I'm sorry,
oh, I think
like
you
Palestinian.
Cut out.
Oh, can you hear me
out.
Better?
Yeah,
oh,
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Sorry. Like me personally, specifically me, don't come at me feminists, but I will always
I'm gonna come
hold.
At you.
No, you won't. You'll agree with me. I view Palestinian men, like, yes, obviously they're men, but to me, they're warriors living under the occupation, being humiliated that in that way truly bothers and annoys me. Like, no, I don't know. Like, I don't like seeing our men being subjected to this. And this is exactly what they are doing. And they know this. This is why Israel does it. In the report, like the story of the man who was put on like basically a noose, right? They put him on a noose, had his tippy toes on a chair, and they would beat him and then insert stuff, like trigger warning you guys, insert stuff inside of his penis, the hole, his like the where he pees, would insert stuff until he faints, and then when he wakes up they're still doing it. This is what our men, our boys are subjected to in these prisons.
It's yeah, so yeah, I like, so the reported acts, like, found by the commission, it serves to, like, obviously emasculate Palestinian men, and it undermines the traditional masculine roles as protectors and providers. And it only, like, this doesn't only affect, like, individual identities, but it also weakens the collective national spirit by attacking foundational social structures, which is why I kind of, like, yapped a little bit in the beginning and to talk about, like, the importance of what the Palestinian man means in our national, in national liberation, is a national liberation framework, mm-hmm. right? And it basically it says that, like, the violence, it extends beyond personal trauma, you know? It symbolizes, like, a broader assault on Palestinian nationalism. So it, like, targets men specifically by demasculating them. The occupying forces, they aim to demoralize and demoralize and destabilize the, like, our fabric as a society that supports, like, resistance and national identity. It's so fucked. And, like, you see that specifically, like, within the Palestinian men who have come back, right? Mm. How, remember the one Palestinian man who came back, and you see it in his eyes, you know? Yes,
the guy with the green eyes.
Mm-hmm. And how,
he couldn't,
like,
talk.
He couldn't talk. And there's, like, a level of, like, there's a stigma, right? And this mm-hmm. is not in unique in Palestinian and no. Palestinian society. This exists globally, right? About the stigma when it comes to reporting crimes, like violent crimes against men, right? And mm-hmm. and how that, like, it leads to silence in these victims, unaddressed trauma, and it perpetuates a cycle where these psychological wounds will fester, mm-hmm. and the targeting of these men, it disrupts, like, the familial and social structures. It leads to a breakdown in community resilience.
Yeah.
And,
you know, like, if for people, you know, in the West that don't understand it culturally, we can talk about, you know, like, oh, when was the last time you've seen your dad cry? You know, like, it's always the stigma of, oh my God, my dad cried. I've never seen him cry. Or, like, your husband or your brother, that he's the man of the house, whatever it is. So imagine not only seeing your dad, husband, brother crying because they lost something, but they were sexually assaulted, tortured, humiliated, mm-hmm. for 15 months straight, right?
But it's like, when we talk about humiliation, like, I think it's important, like, they were quite literally stripping our men to their underwear.
I was gonna right? talk, yeah.
Yeah, remember, go ahead, Hiba, sorry.
No, you're fine. Remember, Hiba, when it first, like, the first time
we
it happened,
look at it. We were not looking at it.
Me and you,
we refuse to watch it.
I won't forget it. Me and you, when people were sharing the pictures, like, we went on a rampage.
Yeah,
we were
like,
you know exactly what it means for a Palestinian man to take off his clothes. Why are you sharing it? And they were like, no, we have to. We have to show the world. Yes, cover it up. Like, I'm sorry for... Again, it's a very cultural thing, but I don't think it's a cultural thing. I think, like, if a random man in America, like, if I asked him, strip right now, sit in your boxers, I'm going to zip tie you.
In the middle
you.
Of the street, in front of your entire community and family.
Your kids, your wife, your mom, all of these, you are going to be humiliated.
You're the guy that you buy your bread from, the guy that you go and get your clothes from. Like, it's embarrassing. It's humiliating.
And that's exactly what they did. And for, you know, for us, I understand, like, yes, we have to show the world, but I can't imagine, like, if I was one of them, right, coming out of there and then seeing my pictures all over everywhere, seeing that, I would not only feel demasculated, humiliated, everything, I would be like, okay, how the heck can I fix my reputation? Like that, and that's so sad because it's true. The men, again, I hate it. I can't believe I'm defending men, but the men within our society are what, like, what hold us. It's like the men and our moms. Like, if your mom is feeling defeated, khalas, you're done, you're defeated. So how does it feel like when we see our men, who are our fighters, our protectors, our everything, being defeated, humiliated, and hearing these stories happening to our people just breaks me even more. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot in this report. I just
You see, like, specifically, right, like, that it, sorry, it's just like It subjects our men, right, the Palestinian man, to acts of sexual or gender-based violence, right? It forces him to engage in ontological warfare, and it just doesn't just harm the body, but it erodes his status as a man, a fighter, a bearer of national will, as a father, protector. And what ontological warfare, excuse me, is like the deliberate tar sorry, I have hiccups. The deliberate
No,
targeting
it's
and
not fun.
destruction. Thank you. The deliberate targeting and destruction of a people's very being. This is what it means. So ontological warfare, it says it's the deliberate targeting and destruction of a people's very being, their existence, identity, and sense of self. And rather than just their physical lives or material capacities, it's a form of violence that attacks the conditions under which a people know themselves, narrate themselves, and continue to be. It's like it, so like the destruction, like, right, the characteristics of ontological warfare, basically, so it reduces the colonized or oppressed to a non-being, to something unrecognizable even to themselves, right? So basically what that means is, like, you leave the Israeli prisons and you go home and you can't even recognize yourself. You're not even like a victim anymore. You just don't even recognize who you are anymore. And it renders that the target is socially, politically, or spiritually illegible. So it's like they're no longer a person, a father, a fighter, a woman, a citizen. And it aims to eliminate the victim's capacity to define who they are, right? In Palestine, this looks like the denial of the word Palestinian, right? Of memory, of homeland, or the right to narrate history. And it's like, right, we see that it was achieved through ritualized. It's not achieved. I wouldn't say it's achieved. This is how they attempted to achieve it. I wouldn't say they're successful, but they attempted to achieve it through ritualized humiliations, forced nudity, sexual violence, desecration of the dead. And the goal is not to just to harm the physical body, but to sever the connection between the person and their meaning of the world. Do you remember, Petra? Like, there's one thing that like. Th There's at one point something like, I read something, and as well as, like, I witnessed something, and it changed, like, my ideology. Remember, like, in like maybe la this was last year, it changed my thinking. It like my place in this world. I was like, fuck, like what am I? Who am I now? This is what Israeli, like, this is what the occupation forces are attempting to do to the Palestinian cause. And it like the victim or the violated body, it becomes the site on which the colonizer writes their power, right? And now, like, think about every single man who's been subjected to sexual violence or gender-based violence, right? Like, when they go home and they, like, just like, and I'm sorry, this is going to be very, like, raw, but like going home to shower, every time you undress, you think about what they've done to you. As a woman, personally, as a victim of some, like, as a victim of rape and as well as, like, sexual-based, like, violence and gender-based violence, I understand how that feels. Your skin feels dirty. No amount of scrubbing can take it off of you. And now the fact that, like, it's been established by the commission, by the Human Rights Commission, that it's systematic, it's so fucked. And whew,
Like, imagine coming home from that, right? And I've seen the videos. We've all seen the videos of the men, the boys. As soon as they see their mom, they're crying like little babies, kissing their feet, talking about like, oh my God, I was dead, I was dead, I was dead. Just all seeing all of that emotion and then going home, they probably can't register it, right? Just because of the world we live in. Not just, it's not, again, not unique to Palestinians, even here in the West. If you're a man and you've gone through that, it's seen very taboo. So you probably don't have anyone to speak with. You aren't going to be able to register it. Sitting with your mom, thinking of how dirty and disgusting you are because of what the occupation has done, or whether your wife, like imagine that, sitting next to your wife, whatever, and remembering every single aspect. I do not know how they are living, and to know that it is systematic, to know
And
that
then they
this.
come home. Sorry, like, to cut you off. They come home and, like, we cannot, like, actually, like, because Israel has made it impossible for these people to continue to fulfill their roles as protectors, right? So you can see some type of, like, you can see some type of, what's that word? Project, not projection. What's that word? But like, what is that word when you like attempt to prove yourself? Like, I can't think of the word. Fuck.
Me either.
But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Overcompensate. When you overcompensate by trying to be this protector, but they're still living a genocide. You cannot. Yeah. Like you, there's no protection in Gaza. You cannot do that, and it's so fucked, and it's psychological, and like I said earlier, ontological, like violence.
Mm-hmm. Going back after that, no, you're 100% going back after that. You don't know. Well, obviously we know now, but you don't know if it's gonna start again. It did. You don't know where the safe place is. You don't know if you should stay in the north where you finally went back, or take your family and go to the south and probably be killed inside of a tent. Do you stay in your house and get bombed there, or do you die in a tent? Not being able to provide food, not because you can't, not because you aren't willing to, but because the occupation has put a full blockade on food, water, electricity. So not only are they demasculated within all of those senses of what they are going through, sexually, violence, abuse, humiliation, just the humiliation of you not being able to get your kid a banana, mm-hmm. a tomato, you know, and like, oh, but you're the provider, you're my dad, you've always gotten it for me, how come you can't now? And then you have to explain it to your kid or whatever else. So it's layers and layers and layers of humiliation for the Palestinian men. And it's to break them down to a point where it's like, fuck Palestine, I don't need to see a free Palestine, I just need my manhood back. And to them, how do you get that back? Is it by fighting back and actually resisting? Or is it by saying, you know what, I'm done, let me take care of my family? And then they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And whatever they choose, they will always feel that lump or that ball, or that hole within them, you know? And it's
100%.
It's so horrible.
And so, like, so... So like the report doesn't like, you know, like it, so if the Palestinian male is targeted through like humiliation, emasculation, and like psychic rupture, right? The stripping away of like the fighter, the father, the protector, and then the Palestinian women are targeted in ways designed to annihilate the nation at its most intimate level, right? Mm. So it's
100%.
Right, and they do it through the desecration of the body that gives life. It raises resistance, holds memory, and it like bears continuity. And so, like the HRC report, it documents sexualized torture, threats of rape, enforced nudity, menstruation related humiliation, systemic degradation of Palestinian women during detention and arrest by Israeli forces. It talks about maternal care. And it talks about women, like the mass roundups in Gaza post October 7th, you see women's were held incommunicado, denied hygiene products, photographed while like naked or semi-nude, mocked about their bodies, in some cases subjected to sexual violence and invasive body searches. In this report, they talked about a 14-year-old girl that they moved to the side and then they had fucking groped her, like groped her breasts, 14. Yeah. The violence isn't incidental, and like this violence here that like exists isn't incidental. It's architectural, right? It's part of a logic of genocidal intent, where destroying the national group involves destroying the womb, right? Because the woman is the bearer of a nation.
100%. I think it's, you know how like you had the metaphor of like how men are viewed within our society, within nationalism. Our nationalism is linked directly to our men. They are the protectors. In every single writing or every single drawing, it's always the man with the kufiyah, the hatta, you know, the whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yeah, that's my fighter, that's our protector. Whereas the women within Palestinian literature, it's Palestine as a whole is usually feminized, right? It's always, Palestine is always, 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 or not always, but like often
most, personified. Like literally 98%. 98%.
It's always personified as a woman. So if the man is the protector of Palestine, of their family, of that, who is Palestine? Within our literature, Palestine is the woman. It's the mother, it's the daughter, it's the bride who's always being attacked, violated, or defended by our men, right? And it's often, we all know Mahmoud Darwish. He has multiple poems where he refers to the land as the violated bride, which again, it reinforces the connection between the women's honor, purity, and then our national sovereignty. So it's very important when we discuss these metaphors, how the man is always the protector, the whatever, and then the woman is always Palestine, wait, the land is the mother, you know.
Oh, and it's not all just, sorry, no, I just want to clarify, because it's not just men, men authors who personify like Palestine as a woman. It's also like women authors. Yeah. We have Samira Azam, we have Shu Isma. There's so many different, like, yeah, right, there's so many different writers. Abu Salma, there's just a lot of also within female literature that also personify the Palestinian woman as the Palestine as a woman. Sorry, I just wanted to just also include that facet, because it's not just men writing about it, it's also women.
Yeah, 100, yeah, even us women, baladi, watani, hiya emmi, whenever we talk about like our country, we're always like, that's my mother. She's a female. Yeah, and she's a female. Fatima, you know, with oh my god, Handala, they created Fatima, who was like the protector of Handala, and she was always linked to Palestine. She was always labeled as Palestine. So Palestine, or the female version, it's always the land is our mother, the land is being violated, where our women are being violated, whether it's our women's fertility, our motherhood, our, you know, our fathers themselves. All of this rape, brutality of the settler colonialism, it's always pinpointed towards like feminism. And the land is the bride, which signifies like our liberation, our return. Mm-hmm. Our bride is, you know, she will come back to the rightful owners, or the rightful owners will go back to it. Or like the Palestine is the grieving mother. We saw Fatma one time in one of the drawings crying, right? Like holding Palestine and crying, shedding tears while Handala was right next to it. And so if the men are the protectors, what are the women? The woman fit, like, is Palestine. Palestine is a woman. Our land is feminine, and it's the grieving mother. It's the land of the martyrs. It's all of it. And so to see, you know, to link that with the metaphors and to see what they do for the Palestinian woman, specifically, they always target either like pregnant women or the areas where pregnant women go to. And this is, I hate saying fascinating, but it is. It's very interesting because, you know, you will not have a Palestinian kid without a Palestinian mom giving birth to it. So to fuel the genocide, they are going to target these maternity wards. They are going to target the Palestinian expecting mothers. They are going to target the IVF areas, which they did all throughout Gaza. We've seen a pregnant, in the report, it said miscarriages exceeded 300%. In the report, they talked about how a woman, and I've gotten 3 C-sections, so I know the pain of a C-section. Having a C-section without a proper anesthesia, without anything, they're getting infections. They are sharing another bed with another woman while having these C-sections, and within 24 hours, they are being let go onto the street. There's no water for these women to clean themselves after giving birth. There's no pads. Like, to think of, I'm sorry, like, we live in such a privileged life. Like, if I get my period, it's so easy. Go to Walgreens or whatever, get a pad, you know? They aren't even able to do that. Not only within Gaza, but within the detention, they would ask them to strip naked. And if a woman is on her period, they would say, that's fine.
They didn't have pads. We had women use just cloth or diapers, or have to
use their dirty clothes.
Yeah, having to use their pads for an extended period of time. And like, then the Israeli soldiers would make fucking fun of them,
calling them dirty and nasty. And oh my God, you stink. Yeah, because I don't have a pad. I'm naked. well, my TMI, but like with blood rushing down through me, and you are forcing me to
And
do
like
this.
also they were also like imprisoning like or like holding women who had just given birth.
Given birth.
And
Yeah.
like we know that after birth you bleed as well. So like even then, like they would be what the woman who would go deliver in the instances where they were actually like able to deliver naturally, you would see that they would be what like they would be what is that word? Dispatch? Is that the word? Oh my God, what's the word when you leave the hospital? Is that dispatch?
Dispatch, no,
No, not dispatch. That's what the fuck?
girl,
Girl.
it's D something. Oh my
Oh my
God.
God. Oh my God, I'm having a moment.
Me, the girl, me too.
A leaving hospital word. Hold up. Leaving hospital word. Discharge.
Discharged. Oh my goodness. I was just like, what is it?
Oh my God. Discharge after leaving the hospital. Like leaving from like 12 to 24 hours later, right after
Yeah.
giving birth. Right, so as like as Petra amazingly and like very like poetically put it, right? Like the Palestinian women were the mothers of martyrs, were political prisoners, were fadayat, were educators, nurses, poets, and we carry land in our metaphors and history of our bodies. So like sexual violence against Palestinian women is not collateral; it's targeted annihilation of a body that signifies the endurance of Palestine. And it I.
That
Yeah, I love you. By stripping,
ain't
violating, photographing, and threatening women, the occupying power engages in ontological violence at the most intimate scale. The effort to sever a woman from her body, her dignity, her role in the community, and her capacity to transit resistance. And in the HRC report, it kind of talks about like how we are a conservative culture, and like women don't like women don't want to be seen without their hijab, and women don't want to be seen in compromising situations, and like we will sometimes get pushed back from our community, which is natural, and like this, you know, it kind of reduces the role of a woman within like the cohesive community, and they do this, like I said, on purpose. And when you like look at like what's happening in Gaza, it's n and like as well as the West Bank, because like the report also concluded that this is happening in like all occupied Palestinian territories, even in Israeli proper, within Palestinian
Yep.
like civilians of Israel, you see Israeli civilians enacting violence on Palestinian men and women. But what's happening is not war crimes or like isolated acts of abuse. Like it constitutes gendered genocide, right?
Yep.
So like when you see imposing measures intended to prevent births from within the group or causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, and when you see sexual violence when used as a widespread systematic practice against the national group, as the report concluded it was doing, or the occupation army was doing, it fulfills the criteria of what a genocide is. But like specifically, like I said, ontological warfare, and I think it's an extremely important term, so I'm going to define it again one last time. But ontological warfare, if it refers to the deliberate targeting and destruction of a people's very being, their existence, their identity, their sense of self, instead of just their physical lives or material capacities, right? Like
Yeah.
and there's this saying in like even in southern Lebanon as well as in Gaza, we will rebuild. Lebanon
Yeah.
is known as the Phoenix, right? Like the city of the
Yep.
Phoenix, we will always rebuild Gaza as well. So it's not about the material destruction of our reality or our physical lives, right? It's like a form of violence that attacks the conditions under which a people know themselves, narrate themselves, and how they continue to just exist. It targets the foundations of existence, right? It aims to eliminate the victim's capacity to define who we are nationally, sexually, culturally, spiritually. It, you know, removes who we are, how we label. We're not Palestinians, we're Arab, right? Oh, we're Arab Israelis. We're not Palestinians. Oh, we don't even exist. We've all heard it before.
You're just Muslim,
Yeah, you're
whatever.
Arabs. Go back to Saudi Arabia, go back to
Yep.
Egypt, go back to whatever. It, like I said, like and the way that they do it is like the violator, like the violated's body or
Yeah.
the victim's body becomes the site on which the colonizer writes their power, right? And the goal is for the colonized to internalize the identity imposed on them by the colonizer as inferior, weak, illegitimate, not existing.
Yeah. And I think they, like, the occupation has seen it, right? How many times has Gaza been, you know, demolished and just built back? So right. they know if they demolish 85% of Gaza, it truly means nothing to Palestinians because we will rebuild. So what's the one thing that they are trying? And we've said this, I know, throughout the podcast, but throughout what, like, the 16 months we've known each other, they are not able to break Palestinians down. They are not able to break them apart from the Palestinian cause, whether it's in Gaza, the West Bank, and proper Israel, or in the diaspora. And we always reference, you know, one of these Zios from back in the day said, the old will die and the young will forget. They truly thought that we would.
Like, or even Golda Meir, when she would be focused so much about how many she'd stay up late at night, she would have trouble going to sleep, like, thinking about how many Palestinian babies were being born the next
yes,
day.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And they truly thought, nah, whatever, they'll forget. And they,
was it one shot, two kills?
One shot, with two kills shot, for pregnant the shot, work.
Yeah, the shirt with the pregnant woman.
Yeah, where IDF soldiers are literally wearing this. So they truly thought that, you know, whatever, within 70 years, Palestinian cause, they'll forget, it wouldn't matter. But we are stronger today than we have ever been, mentally and emotionally. And I truly, like, even Trump, right, even in the West, he said, like, why would they want to stay there? It's, like, completely destroyed. It's uninhabitable. Well, who would even think of staying there? And then you have Gazans stitching
literally painting
that video.
Walls, yeah.
Literally
painting the walls pink and like make
we will yeah we're gonna stay, we do not care, we will rebuild. Even if we don't rebuild, we will sit on a tent in our land as long as we don't leave it. And this is what they do not understand. You can do everything, but we will still be here. And I feel like this is not a new thing, but a more new thing of them humiliating our people to the point where they are breaking them, that they no longer want to be Palestinian or be tied to this cause. And, like, specifically for, I know we, like, jumped a bit over on the women stuff. I wanted to give a bit of, like, the statistics. So, 95% of the women within the Gaza genocide were actually killed within their homes, 95% of the time with children. So that's one. Women and girls were deliberately targeted by ISF or IDF snipers and bombs. And we have cases within this UN report. I feel like we all know Hind Rajab. And I know, Hiba, when we were reading the report, it kind of made us mad about how they described the Hind Rajab thing. They just said, oh, you know, she was here, they were there, then they were killed. And they didn't mention
how. They didn't talk about the brutality of her murder.
Yes, or how long she was there. They just said they were there at this time, and then by 18 o'clock, they were all killed. And even the paramedics didn't survive. And it's like, okay, you could have gotten more into details. We know about the elderly woman, you know, the grandma who was holding hands with her grandson, walking, waving a white flag, who was killed in November of 2023. Her name is Hala Abdel-Ati. And then we talk about the reproductive violence, right?
Talk about the story. Wait, no, talk about the story about the woman who was the
woman.
Yeah, talk about it. Remember the one that you were like, oh, this is the part I read. Do you want to talk what I'm talking about the woman who
with the Israeli flag?
No, the woman who was detained and she didn't, like, her kids with her two kids, and she, like, her two kids were separated from her. Here, I'll find it.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so it says right here, let me find it. It talks about, where is it? So sorry, I'm just gonna find it real quick because it's really important. Because where'd it go? Let me just search it. Alive or sorry, I'm so sorry. Here, Here, the commission also received reports when evacuating with young children, women were sorry. It says the commission also received reports that when evacuating with young children, women were searched, harassed, and threatened by soldiers. So, humiliating women in front of their own children. In one case, a woman was evacuating through Salah ad-Din Street with with her three daughters in early November of 2023 when shots were fired in their direction. Her 8-year-old daughter was almost hit by a shot fired at her feet. In another case, a woman who had been evacuated from a school reported who had evacuated from a school reported that the ISF soldiers at a checkpoint at Salah ad-Din Street beat her and threatened to kill her and shoot her children if she refused to follow orders. The soldiers ordered her to go behind a hill, and her children were made to continue walking by themselves. The woman was strip searched outside and ordered at gunpoint to remove all of her clothes, including her veil, which is hijab. Her hijab in front of male soldiers. While she was being searched, she heard gunshots and thought soldiers had killed her children. She was kept at a che at that checkpoint for a day and a half, for like what nearly what is that 36 hours, and had killed and not knowing where her children were or whether they were dead or alive. Another woman who was passing through the Salah ad-Din Street checkpoint recounted how she and others were stopped by soldiers. The men were forced to strip to their underwear, were blindfolded, and had their hands and feet tied. And the soldiers ordered the woman to remove their clothes. When one woman refused, they threatened her, insulted her, and then beat her. She undressed and took off her veil while she was crying. Sorry, I think that was really important to talk about, like the psychological torture, the torment. Can you imagine 36 hours and not knowing that?
Not knowing where your kids are, like your kids are just walking in the streets.
You hear
God knows what's gonna
gunshots,
happen
and you hear
to them.
gunshots. Yeah, like the whole hearing of the gunshots and not knowing whether they're alive or dead is so terrifying. Because you know the Israeli military is capable, or the ISF is capable of shooting and sniping little kids.
A hundred
But sorry, please
percent.
finish what you were saying.
No. And like imagine all of the people in the Ofer jails or whatever, all of these jails that were taken from Gaza, who are being told like, oh, Gaza is being, destructed, Gaza, and you don't know what's gonna happen to your family, your kids, your mom, your
They
dad,
lie and say
whatever.
your mom is dead, your kids are dead, like
And then
it's so
Allahu
fucked.
A'lam, if you do come back, alhamdulillah, with like the quote unquote ceasefire, all of the women and children from Gaza were returned. Imagine returning to that. Like imagine after 15 months, you know this was Gaza, you come back, you don't know if your parents are alive, your husband, your whatever, and you're searching. You have no idea. That psychological warfare, ugh, I can't even imagine it. I truly cannot. But yeah, for the Palestinian woman, the reproductive violence, right? So we talked about the IVF. Excuse me, the I think it's called Basma, yeah, Al Basma IVF Clinic, which was the only or the largest fertility clinic. It was bombed in December of 2023. In the UN report, it specified that there was no evidence of any militants or Palestinian militants being inside or around that area, and they just bombed it, right? Early December of 2023. It housed 4,000 embryos, 1,000 sperm samples, and 1,000 unfertilized eggs. So, as women, right? Imagine, la samahallah, you can't have kids except for this IVF. You've been saving up your money. You finally were able to, right? You finally had your embryo or your unfertilized egg and you have it saved. And you're like, oh, in a month or two, we're going to do it and we're finally going to have a kid. Just for all of that to get bombed and it's
Or
gone.
even they also talk about the one case of the Palestinian man who went to go register the birth of his two children,
Yes, the
who were
twins.
born through IVF, and he comes back and his wife and his both of his twin daughters were murdered.
That was a large story. It was in August 2024. Yeah. Like imagine that you finally, oh my God, you finally have your IVF beautiful kids just for them to be gone. While you're registering their names on birth certificates, I remember seeing his interview. I'm so mad I forget his name, but he was joking with his wife because they had two names picked out. He was like, oh no, I'm gonna give them two other names. I'll be back with their birth certificates. And he was joking with his wife. And then he came back and he was like, oh, I'm gonna play a prank on her. I got fake birth certificates with like the fake names, but here's the real ones. And you come back and they're gone. Your wife and your two twin daughters not even a day old or a day old, gone.
Like, that's it.
That's it.
How do you live? Like, how do you live? How do you exist after that? That's another conversation for another time, but oh my God. Yeah. And they didn't only, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh no, go.
No, you go. I'm gonna shut up. Go.
No, it's fine. There was a story in the UN report, not a story, but like, you know, people recanting or recounting what was going on because of the Israeli targeting of every single hospital. Pregnant women felt so terrified to go to hospitals. One, because of the targeting, shelling, airstrikes. Two, they don't know if they are able to take a pregnant woman. Is it, you know,
Oh yeah, let me just say this one part, but because of the needs like that was happening, right? When you're going through a genocide, obviously there are more like important, it's like, you know, the triage where you look at the people who are most wounded first. So a lot of time that women were reproductive health care was put to the side, or you know, like they weren't prioritized because of the right, because of the genocide, because you know, someone like someone bleeding out because they just lost a leg is, you know, more important than a UTI, unfortunately, or more important than a vaginal infection, or you having your water broke, right? You know what I mean? Like it's so fucked, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, the largest hospital maternity provider in all of northern Gaza was Al Awda Hospital, and it was besieged. Men were forced to strip. The medical staff were all arrested, and there were pregnant women who were shot by snipers, according to the UN Commission in this report. And then we had a story from a woman who said her husband was so terrified of her going to any hospital that they sat in their house and they would watch videos learning how to deliver a baby. Her husband was like, I'm not letting you go out. I'd rather you have a baby here and I can take care of you than you be killed while going to give birth. Let's learn. And so he spent his time watching videos online to learn how to deliver a baby and take care of his wife. He even considered like finding women within the area and leaving her with them because it would be safer for him to do that than for her to go to a hospital. Insane.
It's bro. Oh my god.
Insanity. And I think like the last thing I wanted to talk about also in this UN report was there is a building for abused women and children. Oh
yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. Yep.
Do you want to talk about it?
No, go ahead, please.
Okay, jump in whenever. But there was a shelter, a women's shelter inside of Gaza for abused women and children. In this shelter, you know, they obviously abused women and children were there. They were told to evacuate. So they did. They went out on the streets. The building was empty. And it was a building of four floors. The fourth floor was where Thank you. The fifth floor was where the woman would be, the abused woman would be. Mind you, this is an evacuated building. No one inside of it. What does the IDF decide to do, Hiba?
Oh yeah, not with a cute little airstrike, which what they're used mm-hmm. to. No, they got a tank, and mm-hmm. They had a tank. They saw that the damage was consistent with a firing from a tank based on the height mm-hmm. of the building, the size of the shell, point of penetration on the wall, and level of destruction of concrete and metals from the munitions explosion within the building. Now let's talk about what is the level of destruction. You would think that the entire building is gone, that it's plummeted. Mm-hmm. They're very capable of doing that. We've seen it. All of Gaza is destroyed. No, but the only floor that was targeted was the fifth floor. The floor, and you said the floor that was the floor where the abused woman would stay in.
Exactly. So not only are they targeting the woman, they're targeting the areas where they feel safe these abused women running away from wherever, you know, their abuser, whatever is going on.
Which is, not unique to the
Not unique.
Palestinians. Yeah,
Exactly. Well,
please.
you read my mind.
Let's
Not
talk about,
unique.
how half of how like 58%
Yeah, we're fine.
50% of cops come home to beat their wives, but like it's neither here nor there. But go ahead. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
not unique to, yeah.
It's not unique to Palestinians whatsoever, but they targeted the building where they felt safe in. This is to the extent that they are going through. But yeah, like this report really opened up my eyes to the actual abuse and torture Palestinian men and women are going through, and it's just insanity. I'm gonna try to figure out a way where we can like have the one you highlighted and like a
Yeah.
link or something. That way any of the
I can upload it
viewers.
to like a Dropbox or something. Maybe you can put that link in like the episode description.
Yeah.
But I want to briefly talk about, because you're saying feeling safe, right? And this is kind of like I asked you earlier, remember? And I was like, yeah, hey, remind me to get back to this point. And it talks like, let's talk about like the about how sorry, one second. We can talk about briefly about the how women, like feeling quote unquote safe, right? That, for example, here, and this is from the report, and it says protracted conflict and displacement result in gendered impacts due to the exacerbation of pre-existing structural gender discrimination. Women from Gaza have told the commission about like how family members, due to their own protection, as we saw with Petra when she was explaining about the man who did not want his wife to go, he'd rather take care of her at home in order for her to survive, and how they were like restricting their like leaving and coming, obviously for their own safety. But you saw that like one woman described how when she and her family were displaced, they had to share one room with several families, and her father, like obviously within Islam you have to remain covered, and so her father told her, yeah, you continue to wear the hijab or the veil. He had asked her to remain covered due to the presence of other men and not to leave the building where they were sheltering for her own safety. And so and then another woman tells the commission, I worked as an engineer before the war and used to have a lot of freedom. The war changed that, and suddenly women had to stay inside. I had to ask my father and brothers to get me what I needed, even pads when I had my period, which was so embarrassing. This had a huge psychological effect on me. Throughout the conflict, women and girls have been forced to wear their veil or their prayer cover constantly as the living spaces are shared with men outside the immediate family. I'm gonna get back to this real quick, but like I wanna just go back up a little bit where they talk about how women were coming into hospitals because of the because there was is an extreme they were getting a lot of women were getting what's it called? A lot of UTIs,
Infections.
like UTIs. Because why? Because when they were living in these camps, they were holding in their pee because it was like they had to hold it in. What are they gonna go? They're gonna go outside in front of all the men? No. And if they wanted to go, they had to walk such a long way in order to go to the restroom. And it's extremely important, like to talk about that specific part. And so you already talked about like how basically, right, during the first month of the war, more than 9 out of 10 women and children were killed, were in residential buildings. You said that specifically, but like and how like 95% of women were killed together with at least one child. So like it shows that it's a pattern that was systemized and like done completely. When you look at the I'm just trying to find the specific sorry, I'm just trying to find the one specific like sorry, where did it go? And how like I'm trying to talk about like how basically this will have a loss like a lasting in effect on women's fertility in the like in Gaza, right?
Yeah.
So
It talked about how like the infections will cause infertility.
And not even just that, just like the psychological trauma, the measures with the like malnutrition, and the report talks so much about like the famine and like the food, and how women were not being able, like women were not even like, can you imagine going through a genocide, and then you're not even being able to produce milk, like you weren't even being able to lactate
Lactate,
to feed
yeah.
your own baby,
Yeah, most of them
It's
were like anemic as well,
and then
very
on top of that,
malnutritioned.
sorry, and then on top of that, like I'm about to crash out because like on top of that, right, there was no clean water in order to give their kids formula.
Yep.
Like,
And
anyways.
formula being so expensive and not being let in.
And so let's go back to like the whole veil thing, right? But essentially, let me go, sorry. I need to just find it so I can just talk about it because I think it's extremely important to talk about. Where did it go? Right here. Oh no, okay, yeah, here. Sorry. So throughout the conflict, women and girls have had to force to wear their veil or their prayer cover constantly, as living spaces are shared with men outside or the outside the immediate family. One woman told the commission that due to the mixed gender spaces, women had to wear their veil around the clock, day and night, and that this had become a real concern for them. The woman told the commission, "We had to be veiled 24 hours a day. We were 17 people in one room, including my male cousins. So my father told me to make sure my sister and me, my sister, that we were always covered. Also, we never knew if we needed to leave the home suddenly due to an aerial strike, so we were constantly prepared to run." And this one is like so fucked, and it goes, "A woman working with an organization provided psychosocial support to women in Gaza stated that women and girls stay covered at all times. And the commission received information that women and teenage girls remain covered 24 hours a day, so that if they are killed, they die covered. Women in Gaza have lost everything. They have lost their family members, their homes, their schools. At least they want to be able to control their bodies and keep their dignity even in death." And I'm gonna say like one more thing before we conclude like today's episode, but I think when I like tried to talk about like right ontological warfare and violence a little bit ago when it comes to the woman, right? It's what it what the Israeli what the what Israel, right, or the ISF or whatever the case is, were attempting to do is they're attempting to like slowly erase what it means to be a Palestinian woman, right? So basically to have autonomy over her body, to speak without fear, to raise a son or daughter without expecting him to be arrested or killed, to exist without being inscribed as a threat, a womb, or a witness. Because this is the only way that they view us, a threat, a womb, or a witness. And in this logic, the Palestinian woman is not allowed to be a subject. Like, we're not allowed to be even a subject, right? She is made to be a symbol and then punished for it. She's reduced to either an incubator of terror or an object of domination. I'm gonna like repeat that one more time, right?
Yes.
The Palestinian woman is not allowed to be a subject, right, in the logic of like ontological warfare or violence. She's made to be a symbol, and then she's punished for it. She's punished for it by either being reduced to either an incubator of terror or an object of domination. Yeah. And
That was good.
Thank you,
I
thank
mean,
you.
they talked about it, right? How like women are the caregivers of everyone, and how they are forced, like when men
To
and
stay
children.
behind, yeah, to stay
Yep.
behind during like evacuation orders, right? So like during evacuation orders, a lot of times during evacuation orders, right? Like the women are usually the caretakers of the family. They're the ones that have like in the report it talks about. It's really kind of really. It was there's one part that was like really pretty, and it talked about how like a woman had to relocate. What was it like 12 times over like 2 months? Like statistically speaking, and women have this duty to make everywhere that they like go in, they're displaced into a home for her family. Imagine doing that 12 times, and on
12
top of that,
times.
imagine like having like let's say like your grandpa or your like
Yep,
injured
that's
brother, like they can't leave, they can't
yeah.
evacuate, Because most of the time, as we see, when they're evacuating, they're being shot and murdered or being made to walk extremely long, gruesome hours, right? With no shoes and in pain. So they would decide to stay behind, and women would like had this, like the women of Gaza were subjected to this because they're the caretakers. And I know we're almost done, so I just want to say one more thing, that about like women, right? Most of these women like will never testify, right? Their stories are going to be buried in collective silence, and it's going to be enforced by like stigma, and fear, and like the brutal knowledge that justice is structurally foreclosed under occupation. And that silence is not absence, it's coerced ontology, right? And the to speak, to record, to listen to these testimonies is what the HRC has done, is to begin reversing the terms of erasure, right? It's to insist that these women are not symbols, we're not shame, we're not statistics, but we're sovereign subjects who have been violated and whose pain indicts the entire system, not just individual perpetrators. Genocide doesn't always begin with bombs. Sometimes it begins with stripping you naked, mocking your blood, and leaving you to rot in a cage. And to conclude, the body remembers, and in re remembering, it resists. So take it away, Petra.
Oh, that ate. Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, this report is very, like, very informative. It is a very big trigger warning. So for anyone who wanting to read it, take that with a grain of salt. It's hard to get through. We've touched a bit well, a lot on it. So I would highly recommend anyone wanting to see what's truly happening or what has happened inside of Gaza to go and read it. Yeah. With that, we have reached the ending of our podcast of our episode, and this is where we talk about and we humanize at least one of our martyrs. Again, we talk about humanize Gaza a lot, and I feel like this is a very important episode for it. Humanize Gaza was created to commemorate every single one of our martyrs in Palestine, whether it's Gaza or the West Bank, and in Lebanon, who have died for our cause, who have been martyred for our cause. We will not have them be forgotten ever. You can always find more martyr stories if you head to Quora and search Humanize Gaza. We're also working on a newsletter, so stay tuned for that. But I did want to highlight Adnan Al-Burj specifically for this episode because in the UN report, it talks about Adnan Al-Burj and it asks Israel to release his body because Israel is infamous for keeping our people's bodies even after they are dead. So, with that being said, we're going to talk about Adnan Al-Burj. He was taken hostage in December of 2023 by the Zionist entity or Israel. So, Dr. Adnan Al-Burj, he was 50 years old. He was the head of orthopedic department at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. He unfortunately was martyred on April 19th of 2024 in the Ofer prison, a detention facility in the West Bank. So he was taken from Al-Shifa. He tried to go to multiple other hospitals while Al-Shifa was being targeted, but he wasn't able to. He was one of the people kidnapped from the hospital. He spent his days helping helping treat the injured, helping bury the martyrs, and he would actually sleep on the floor of the hospital, and wake up whenever, someone new would come in. He would help, and he was an amazing person. Dr. Adnan's case, is a very sad, but it's the reality. He was detained while undertaking his duty to patients and caring for them according to the oath he took as a medical practitioner. He died for trying to protect the rights to life and health of his patients. Dr. Adnan's case raises serious concerns that he died following torture at the hands of Israeli authorities. His death demands an independent international investigation. So, With that being said, the base he was staying in is the Sadi Taiman one, which was notorious for abusing of Palestinians. This is where most of our Palestinian men were being raped or sexually assaulted. And that's exactly what happened to Dr. Adnan al-Burj. He was sexually assaulted, raped, dehumanized, and killed by that. He literally was martyred by the torture. We don't have an investigation yet. We do know that they talked about it, and medical reports have come out that he was basically raped to death. No soldier has been arrested. We still are waiting for an investigation, and they still hold his body till this day. So within the UN report, it talks about how his body needs to be released with no nothing, just release the body, not just for Dr. Adnan al-Burj, but every single body that they currently hold. And yeah, it's very sad. I highly recommend more people look into Dr. Adnan al-Burj. He's not the only one. I want everyone to still remember we have Dr. Abu Sofia, who's still a prisoner. God knows what he's going through. They still have not charged him. He's just being detained. We have no idea what he's still being held with. He was supposed to be released in phase two of the ceasefire that Israel has severed. So yeah, that, you know, this is what we are here for. We're here to commemorate any of our martyrs and to continue speaking about every single one of them who's in a detention facility going through all of this torture.
That's amazing. Thank you, Petra. Allah yarhamo.
Allah yarhamo. Thank you.
We're not even, yeah, thank you. We're not even free even in our death. We can't even have dignity even in our death.
I agree, yeah.
They're so evil.
Hasbi Allah. But yeah.
What does your husband always say?
No, can't say that. I mean, yeah. Yes, that, but you know.
No, I'm joking with you. Like, he's, you know.
Yeah. I feel like
what, heavy episode.
A very heavy episode, but it's very much needed. And I think more people need to look into the metaphors of our Palestinian literature and how it correlates within what is currently happening. I want everyone to remember, now that the ceasefire has been broken by Israel, Hamas has continuously stated they are able and willing to move to phase two. Israel, this was always their plan. And Hiba, I don't know if you remember when we talked about the ceasefire. I always knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, and like, right. And that's why I would always yell at people like, oh, stop celebrating. Stop.
Yes,
like,
yes.
First of all, the Palestinians have in Gaza have been compounded with the worst and insurmountable grief in the world. The only people who deserve to celebrate is them for existing and for continuing to stay alive. We don't get to celebrate. We need to do more. And we were saying this literally the day of the ceasefire because like we were, oh, like we can, it's like we had this like, more like we, it just like felt like we could take a breath to just like quote unquote stop feeling bad for these people, like, oh, woohoo, we can finally live our lives and like go mm-hmm. and shop without feeling guilty. It's just so fucking ridiculous. It's so self-serving. And 100%. Our end game and our goal is liberation, not a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. Liberation.
Yeah. And I mean, with that being said, protests are still happening. Boycotting is still happening. I want to stress that within America, obviously, specifically, the one thing we can still do is protest. Please, please, please go look for your nearest protest. I do not care if you're fasting. The people in Palestine and in Gaza are dying while they have not had any food in their system. So you can go and protest for an hour. I want to stress that anyone who's undocumented, please stay safe. If you aren't able to,
leave your phones at home.
Leave your phones at home. Wear masks. If you are undocumented, if you are Black
as well.
Sorry, the baby.
It's okay.
If you're Black, you're going to be racially profiled. If you feel like it's safer for you to stay home and continue your advocacy that way, please do. But we have to do more on the ground. And hopefully with, you know, this starting up again and CNN speaking about it, you know, Speaking about the truth, hopefully it's going to be a push for people in the West to actually do something on the ground. So please protest. I don't know how good calling your Congress and your reps is, but if you feel like, you know, that's your choice, please do so.
I don't know. I'm going to say following this issue is the system, and I don't think we should be following the rules that the system has put forth for us in order to fix the system. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's like continuing this. Why are we listening to them? Let's go fuck it. Let's go fuck it up. Let's go fuck it up, y'all.
I agree. Look into your state, your city's protest. If there isn't one, if there isn't one, create your own. It's not that hard to, you know, write a sign and just walk around. Grab your group of friends, whatever it is. If there are facilities within your areas that are complicit in sending out arms to Israel, that's where you should be protesting.
Go to your city, go to your local city and ask them to divest from Israel, right? Find grassroots organizations or like, socialist programs within like there's many like socialist advocacy or grassroots organizations and located in small or local cities that advocate for so many different things, like more so like obviously the Palestinian cause, right? When Palestine is free, we're all free. However, it advocates for like against the mine, for example. They have like ICE what to do in the situation or the process, like, or whatever, if ICE shows up to your door, what to do, who to call, legal frameworks, like how to know your rights. And it has also like when it comes to even like for Black bodies as well, what to do to protect your own and to stay safe in the hands of like state mandated violence. So like, you know, these are pretty cool, even if you're not a socialist, to you know, start being engaged like this way, right? We, you know, social media advocacy is amazing and great, but we also need to get our asses up, you know, understand it's been hard and a lot of people can't because people are also disabled and they can't. But if you are able-bodied, please get your asses up and go.
Yeah. 100%. There's so much more that needs to be done on the ground. And hopefully, you know, we can think of something better to than just acting reactively. Because I feel like that's what we usually do. It's like, oh, Gaza's being bombed, protest. No, we should be protesting and rioting every single day until Palestine is free. And I hope that with the end of the ceasefire, people are waking up and seeing that, yeah, no, Israel, there's no way to negotiate with them. A ceasefire means nothing. They don't care about hostages. They don't care about anyone. And this is the time. I want people to be as active as they were October of 2023. And yeah, so sorry for my little yap, but I think it was very much needed.
We loved it.
And the baby's breaking up everything. So I guess should be the ending of the episode. Thank you so much, Hiba. That was amazing.
Thank you, Petra.